Okay, so the last lecture I'd like to cover basically two topics. First I'd like to finish a discussion of log-gen duality for compact manifolds. And then the second topic, I'd like to discuss a recent development, which is this idea of the topological vertex. As I said before, this is joint work with Bogdan Flora. And topological vertex is work of Aganagic, Clem, Marino, Fafa. And I'd like to give you some ideas. The discussion is going to contain some ideas. So also unpublished work by Antonella Grassi and myself. Unpublished. Okay. So to start with the first topic, the setup we had last time, we looked at an extremal transition between compact Calabi-Yau threefold. I had I was looking at a threefold Z, which was it's a projective bundle over F naught, and this contained a pencil of anti-canonical divisors Y mu, such that Y zero is singular. With ordinary, with two isolated ODPs, and then the transition. There is a smooth Krepunt resolution of the singularities, and that's which can be done by a toric blowup of the ambient space. So you do a toric blowup of the ambient space, you end up with a fourfold Z twiddle, and the fiber is going to be a Hitzebrück surface F1. So you, going from here to here, you just blow up a surface, a section. So that was the setup we had last time. And the goal would be now to understand how log-gen duality works for in the transition from this smooth surface, a smooth Calabi-Yau Y mu, to here we have another smooth Calabi-Yau X, which is a Krepunt resolution, so X over. Why not? It's a Krepunt resolution of singularities. So, as I said before, I'm going to do this only at genus zero. So what's the idea? The idea is that y mu has some smooth y mu. It contains two vanishing cycles, L1 and L2, which are both spheres. Vanishing cycles, and the main point. So the main question, if you want, is try to construct. So the main question is try to construct topological open string amplitudes. For we put n d-branes on L1 and n anti-d-branes on L2. So that means I have here a un Chern-Simons theory on L1 and a un Chern-Simons theory on L2. So as I discussed in the previous lectures, the main what would one like to do is to somehow sum over open string instantons, the surfaces in y mu, with boundary, which end on the two spheres. So the one point, you have to find a way of summing. So we want to sum over surfaces, over open string instantons. So Now the main ingredient that you heard couple of times so far, we want, as we said many times, we want the moduli space of open string maps. Then we want some virtual cycle here. And the crucial, one crucial ingredient is the T action. So out of these three ingredients, I want to produce a series of instanton corrections to the Chan-Simons theory, which depends on the connections through the holonomy variables. So the last time I noticed that this element here, it's going to cause a problem. So this is going to cause a problem because if we work on a smooth hypersurface y mu, there is no T action. So then the question is there anything we can do? So the main idea was to the way out of this problem, the way out of this situation is to take this y mu and degenerate it. Take a toric, not a toric, but to take a degeneration of y mu. So it has a smooth surface. And you break it in two pieces inside z. We wrote some equations for these pieces last time. We had here, we've had an equation of the form w squared. What's important is that this is a reducible hypersurface here. And one of the components, as you see, has multiplicity 2. The other one has multiplicity 1. So I'm going to call this y mu degenerate. And I'm going to call this component multiplicity 1 y bar. So that's the first step. Now, what happens in this process, it turns out that if you look at the vanishing cycles, L1 and L2, you can follow them through this degeneration process. I should draw this bigger. So what happens is that you end up with two cycles, L1 bar and L2 bar, on y bar. That was 2 and 1, which are really contained in the smooth part. They don't touch the normal crossing. And moreover, these two cycles have local equations of the form x, y plus z, w equals mu, and x equals y bar, and z equals w bar, in some local toric coordinates. So locally, these cycles look more or less like we are used, the cycles you get from deforming conifold singularities. And what's important is that in this limit, there is a T action on y degenerate, which preserves L1 bar and L2 bar. So we seem to have sort of the kind of picture, the kind of setup we like. Except for one problem. It's almost what we like, except that. Sure. This is not, okay, actually, thanks for the question. This is not the conifold degeneration. So this one here, its mu goes to 0. But that's not what I'm doing.
Because your equation doesn't have a mu.
Oh, I'm sorry. It should. So this is not what this is. Yeah, that's an important point. This is not the same thing. You take a smooth guy and you just break it into pieces such that you get a torus action and nice cycles. So it's almost what we want, except for now we got this thing here, but now we run into some kind of trouble because, moduli spaces of so what I call open string maps are not rigorously understood, even in simple situations. Now we seem to end up with some sort of a moduli problem for open string morphisms on this y degenerate, on this degenerate hypersurface, which is Well, see, it has multiple components and so on. So this seems to be an intractable problem from the enumerative point of view. So what's going to happen now? The solution, yes?
Is the T action free on L1 bar and
L2 bar? It's free, I think. On the cycles? Yeah, it's free. Okay. Yeah, it's free. Okay. So we would just like to crank up our machinery, but we have to adapt to this situation. So the way you adapt to this situation is, well, one could perhaps try to understand to what extent you can work with such a hypersurface, but this is not the route we took. So we take the ambient space point of view, if you want. So that means that once we have the cycles inside, we want to look at maps F from a sigma with zero surface with H boundary components to Z, to the ambient space Z. And now the boundary conditions look a little bit funny. They look funny because I still want the boundary of this surface to be mapped to L bar, which is the union of the two cycles. But this obviously is not Lagrangian in Z. So this is not for dimensional reasons. So it's not Lagrangian. So far, this moduli problem looks a bit funny. But nevertheless, I mean, at the level of rigorosity we can at least find a machine that produces numbers. So you get a numerical algorithm, a computational algorithm out of this situation. So the computational algorithm, it's the same as we had before. So the computational algorithm I want to propose, we want to sum over these maps using the T action. We sum over such maps using the T action. So first, you identify all fixed loci psi inside this moduli space in which beta is just a relative class. You first identify this fixed loci. And then for each fixed locus, psi, we want to assign this coefficient which is this local coefficient. And we also want to assign an instanton factor and the holonomy factor. These two things will do exactly the same as before. It's Q, it's just e to the minus the area of the map, and then the holonomy factor is just it's derived from it's a simple. No. Now the fixed maps will go to Z. That's the trick. You don't want to go to Y mu degenerate because it doesn't happen.
Is it possible to embed L bar into a Lagrangian submanifold of Z such that the intersection of L bar with?
Okay, I got a question. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. So, well, in order to produce, well, these things would be so. Let me first show you how the fixed loci look in this example. That's going to make it a bit clear. So the fixed loci, let me draw. Oh, I shouldn't have erased this, but anyway. So what happens is this. You have this P1 bundle. Draw two fibers over F0, the P2 bundle, P2 fibers. And what happens when you analyze the fixed loci, you realize that you have two spheres sitting somewhere inside here. And they don't touch each other. And now you get some invariant disks that look something like this. And then, well, then they continue. There are other components that. So the total picture is a bit complicated, but together, you can identify invariant disks. So you find some fixed invariant disks sitting in Z. So you find, you actually, when you do it, you find four invariant, T invariant disks in Z. You can call them B1, B2, B3, and B4. No, I'm sorry, these are really 8. It's 2 times 4. You have a set of 4 for each. Then you have some other disks. L2. Well, this is less. The technical details are less important. The important point is that you really get a fixed configuration of invariant disks. So now this allows you. You can think how the fixed morphism, the fixed open SME maps look like. So what's going to happen is that you're going to have maps of this form. Have maps that have some closed component. And then they have open components. So these are some open components delta, and this closed component is sigma naught. I'm looking only at Gina zero maps. Yeah, so they have to be Gina zero. So what happens is that the disk would be mapped to the disk in the target space, and the closed components have to be mapped to invariant curves in the target space. So that's how the fixed loci look. So now you see before in the local case we looked at what happened is that the closed component was always collapsed to a point. But this is not the case here. This map of the closed component can map the closed components over arbitrary configurations of invariant curves in Z. So the summation of instanton number the over instantons. In this case, it would be much more complicated. I think that's related to a question that Anton asked a couple of lectures ago. In some sense, this couples the closed string to the open string, I think. I think that's answered. All right, so, well, you do that. Okay, so that's what I want to get. So in the end, what the main point after you look how these things, after you look at all these things, what happens is that you realize that so there is a one-to-one correspondence between fixed loci psi in M0H. Z L bar, some homology class beta, and fixed loci, I'm going to call them psi naught, in the moduli space M0H Z with some other homology class beta prime. And this is really the moduli space of closed string maps with H marked points, because here, we are going to get marked points, P1 up to PH, where the disks are attached. So then the data, sigma naught, P1 up to PH, and the restriction of F to sigma naught defines a point in m bar 0 h z with some beta prime. Beta prime can be determined from beta just because you have to subtract off the cohomology class of the disk components. So, yeah. Yeah, so to the point, this can have higher degree covering. Now what happens is that you have to... Yeah, you fix the winding numbers, yeah. Yeah, you fix the, yeah, okay. I was gonna say that you have to use this isomorphism. Yeah, you fix the winding numbers. So you get fixed loci here. So these are, this is a much better behaved moduli space. It's just a standard moduli stack of maps with marked points to Z. So that's sort of how the fixed loci look like. And now my job is to produce these numbers here. So in order to produce these numbers, yes? Oh, so it's going to be an automorphism. So. No, this is not a. Okay, this is just a correspondence between the fixed loci. Now, the automorphism factor as well, we have to be careful when you write down your local formula. But that's not a map. This is not a map between moduli spaces, this saggle here. This is just a correspondence. So so the thing you say is true, but it can be taken into account when you compute these numbers. Okay, so that's my job, is to produce these numbers here. So all I need to do for that, all I need to do for that is, well, I need basically, what I need is, it's really, I just need the local data. So I need sort of deformation, the tangent obstruction complex for a map from sigma gh to z with boundary conditions on L bar. So now this looks like something like, for open string maps, this looks, I'm going to define in a minute there. This was a general form of a tangent obstruction complex for the open string maps, if you remember. And the sheaf I got, this tau, this round T, whatever it's called, it's now it's a Riemann-Hilbert sheaf on sigma. And what it was in the Lagrangian case, where this tau was just a pair, so tau, it's really a Riemann-Hilbert, well, bundle or sheaf, I'm going to confuse these things. On sigma. So how you build it? Well, you construct, you take F upper star of T of Z, that's a holomorphic bundle, and then to complete the data, you need to produce a total real subbundle on the boundary. Well, that can be done using these two boundary conditions. So I have a totally real subbundle on the boundary. So I can construct at least the locally on the moduli space. I can study how the moduli space looks locally.
In the non-compact case, the analog would be a correspondence between open string an absolute point.
Yeah. In that example that I studied, yeah.
Right. There was a lot of work to do then after you understood the space of maps to a point. So this is not going to... But basically here, you start with a closing instant and then you have to do all the work that you did before for each one. I'm asking if this is simpler or more complicated.
It's much more complicated. I think that it's, I'm not, yeah, it's virtually that, yes. Because I use the boundary conditions to produce the data that I need for local deformation theory. So, but that's not all, because if you look at this obstruction complex, it will produce a virtual cycle if you want a positive dimension. So we want more, something more. And what we want an obstruction bundle. V open, let's call it V open on sigma. Oh, no, not on the sigma, on the modulus. So the obstruction bundle will have the role of imposing extra relations on the maps such that you really get a zero cycle. So if you want, I can remember, so let me recall what happens for closed string invariants of hypersurfaces. So you look at some hypersurface y and z, and you look at the moduli space of maps 0, 0 to z in some fixed class beta, and this had a virtual cycle of positive dimension. So this can't give you alone numerical invariance. So what you do, so this is in something like A positive of Z of moduli space. So what you do, you produce extra data, which is an obstruction bundle V closed, and that depends only on the linear system containing Y. And it's something I just gave you the fiber of each point, but you can give a more intrinsic construction. That's not essential. So the fiber was just H upper naught of on sigma F upper star of O. Well, it's minus KZ because these are anti-canonical divisors. Y's are anti-canonical divisors. So you put this bundle and then you pair the Euler class of this bundle with the virtual cycle and you end up getting numerical invariance. So I'm trying to follow the same strategy here. So now I would just have to produce the obstruction bundle for you. So the obstruction bundle for this open, in this particular case, okay, so I'm going to define V open at sigma and F to be H naught of on sigma, V sigma if you want, of some another Riemann-Hilbert bundle, kappa. And this kappa is constructed is the pair F upper star Tz, no, F upper star top power of Tz, that's a holomorphic bundle on sigma. And now, again, using the boundary conditions, I can produce a totally real subbundle on the boundary. So I produce a Riemann-Hilbert bundle, and I get this tautological presentation for the open string obstruction bundle. So now I claim these are the ingredients I need to actually get the local numerical coefficients.
So in the closed string case, this obstruction bundle follows very nicely from the Lagrangian. So the A of the
signal. Oh, here, this one.
Okay.
That's a good question. I don't know. I didn't try it. That's a nice question. I don't know if I... Okay, anyway, this works pretty well. This construction works quite well. So these are the ingredients I need to produce numbers. And I mean, to produce the local coefficients. And then, Yeah, that was, yeah.
No, the mathematics is clear. I'm just struggling to understand how this is related to the atrium of logical model of the
system. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, these Lagrangians are not fixed points of global and automorphic involutions. Yeah. Locally, yeah. Yeah, sure. That's what I'm saying. So, all right. So these are the ingredients that enter computation. So now the C psi I'm after, DOH, is just, it's, well, formally can be written like this. It can be written formally like that, but then I can use the correspondence to closed string fixed loci, to the fixed loci like psi naught, to convert this formal, somewhat heuristic expression into something better defined, and this is going to. Okay, so you can convert that into something like looks like this. You get some disk factors. And then you get integral over this psi naught virtual of ET V closed and what happens here, let me, and here what's going to happen is that you're going to get a combination of Manifold classes because we think of the structure of a fixed locus map, of a fixed map. You have contributions from the deformations of the nodes. So this is going to produce for you a combination psi 1 h, psi I plus some equivariant classes alpha I that I'm not going to make explicit. They just follow from, those are elementary. So the final computation has this form. So already this integral is much better behaved because it's something that we know. And in fact, I want to claim that when you sum, if you sum over, so you can, if you sum over all fixed loci, psi, with fixed, this is another sense, open string data. In other words, if I fix the restrictions here and I freeze them, specify by some winding numbers, and specify the targets and everything, that's why I fixed open data, So let me put this in quotation mark. If you sum that, then in the end you realize, well, after some work, you realize that what you're really doing here, what the contribution you get, it's really like up to factors, up to disk factors. It's really like a multivariable J function again. So it's something like F lower star of ET V closed over this product of psi I plus alpha I. And this is it's pulled back to some fixed point. So let me call it FP. Let me explain the notation here. It's the evaluation map goes from M0 H Z, some class beta prime maybe, to Z to the H. And then I have to specify some FP is some, it's a fixed point, which is really determined by the open data. So in other words, the fixed point, so imagine this is going to go to some fixed configuration of disks in the target space, and you determine them. So the fixed point here is determined by the origins of the disk. So that's the type of computations you end up doing every time. I was just trying to say that in the end, I can recover a very familiar object, this multivariable J function of the ambient variety Z. OK, so that's the rough ingredients that go into this. Now, the way from this point on, you just you follow the same pattern. So from this point on, you just go ahead and follow the same pattern. You just you have to construct an action, a corrected action, which is the James Simons action, plus an instanton series, and S instanton is going to be, well, it's what we, the sum over H, GS minus 2 plus H, and the all classes beta, and then it's a sum over psi M0 H ZL beta, local coefficients times a Q factor and times a Hronum factor. And you have to sum up everything, and in the end, you compute the expectation, corrected partition function. So that would give you some genus zero. F open at genus zero as a function of GS and some Q. These are really Q open. Okay, so that gives you that. So now the idea is to try to see if duality works. So the way duality would work, well, the conjecture. What is the conjecture now? Conjecture would be that if I take F not open, this is not a good notation. This is not a good notation. Don't open here. It really depends on Z and L bar. It's genus zero. Open. Now you have to add it. You have to add to it the Gromov-Witten genus zero Gromov-Witten potential of Y. This is a closed string expression, QY. This has to equal genus zero Gromov-Witten potential of X. So that would be the conjecture, that this would be the conjecture of Lagrangian duality in this particular case. So these are standard Gromov-Witten. These are just Gromov-Witten potentials. So see, it's different, because even after the transition, we don't lose all the Keller classes. So we still have holomorphic curves after on Y. So we have to sum over those as well. So in some sense, this is a really different situation than before. Do I have different G-string? No, G-string is the same. Yeah. I have different Qs, and then there is some map between them. But I don't have time to explain that in detail. But yes, there is some map relating Q open, Q Y, and Q X. And that's how you... No, but the G-string has to be the same for everything. You have to tune your parameters, but the G-string is the same for... Well, G-string, G-string is really 2 pi k plus n, right? But that's what G-string is in terms of Chern-Simons.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But it has to be the same for all of them. Not necessarily, but maybe k is different. But in this particular example, I do have to have the same number. But yeah, but... Oh, if you have, yeah. No, it's okay. I'm not sure, but my interpretation is that you have to give k some value such that G-string is the same for everything. Because really, just if you want to interpret this as a string theory, you want an expansion in GS. No, the thing that the level that
is.
Yeah, but. From G-string. I think that's the point of view I like to take now. Otherwise, you can't get a consistent open string interpretation. All right. So let me. So you try this, and I just want to point out an interesting fact that happens, because it won't work quite on the nose the way it worked for the local case. And there is some subtlety here. So you try, and in fact, you have to pick up your framing to be, again, this fractional framing. So you have to choose this fractional framing. And you try to play the same game and try this, and it really fails. And why does it fail? Now, it's a very interesting geometric situation here. It fails on the nose. So what happens? What I'm trying to say is that there is a modified. You can do something. You can have to refine your duality conjecture to make it better. So you choose fractional framing, and then, well, you really have to think about how these things are computed in terms of localization. So I just give you the rough idea. The rough idea is this. I have a... This was the situation before. And that's the situation after, or whatever, before and after. It has the two sides. And one has to think, for example, how the components of the fixed loci look in the open in the moduli space. So if you think about how the fixed loci look, for example, if you look at vertical classes, that's the most obvious case. If you look at vertical classes, you get fixed loci, you have disconnect. So the target space, so you get disconnected components corresponding to They can take value in each of the four fixed fibers here. That's the closed string part. On the other hand, if you look at the open string fixed loss, right, they can only take values in two out of the four components. They miss completely the other two components just because of geometric reasons. I mean, there is no way of mapping a vertical open string map to this component just because of geometric reasons. So what happens here is that you really have to truncate your Gromov-Witten potentials to a subsum of a fixed loss line. So there is some truncation. So F Y 0 G S Q I trace truncated and F X 0 G S Q I Q X. And these are no longer numerical series. They are really equivariant, so they take values in So if you do that, then it's quite interesting. You get an identity. So you can show until the computations get too complicated to check, and then duality works. So in some sense, this points out that there is some very intimate relation between Gerasimov's theory and localization of closed ring maps. So there is some very close connection. So the Gerasimov's theory in this case, before his geometric reason, cannot see all the maps on the other, all the fixed loci on the other side. But if you do the truncation right, it works. So in some sense, now you can ask, well, what's the?
I thought
I'm not claiming any physical interpretation for this. Well, not these. Those, yes. Which one? Well, I make no claims about the physical theory. I mean, I give you the situation the way I understand it now. And there is one more aspect that may bear some, I mean, it which is important. So from that point of view, it just follows that somehow. What this really says is that duality works in some sense locally on the moduli space. So it works. I mean, you really convert the graphs, closing graphs to this Gerasimov's expectation value, and that works somehow locally on the moduli space. And now the final point I want to make is that so those will depend on the torus weights. Now there is a special choice, if you want, of torus weights. For which F0, Y, and X truncated, it's the full thing. And for that, you just have to think about an example we saw in the first lecture, namely the conifold Gromov-Witten potential computed by Faber and Pandari-Pandé. So in that case, for a special choice of torus weights, only very few graphs contributed. So the same phenomenon happens here. For a special choice of torus weights, the truncated thing is the full thing. And then the duality works in the usual sense. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say about compact Calabi-Yau.
Is the framing dependent here?
The framing is chosen to be, well, I make this canonical choice of framing that I explained last time. So there is a choice of framing which is fractional. Framing is, it's exactly the same choice. except that in this case it fails to produce a numerical answer automatically.
Yeah, it doesn't drop out.
It doesn't drop out. But there is a reason for it doesn't drop out. The reason is this.
If it doesn't drop out, and then you also specialize the way.
If you want the full answer, yes. But all I'm saying is that you don't have to do that. You just have to understand what exactly you're summing. And I'm claiming you're summing a subsum of graphs, not all graphs.
But
so,
can you say more conceptually, what is, or maybe I just follow up, what is the subsum?
Well, it's, for vertical classes, you just have to look at graphs that at fixed loci that project to these two components that correspond to these. The other ones would not be seen. I mean, this points out that duality works locally somehow. It transfers closed-spin maps that map here to open-spin maps that map there. But the closed-spin maps that map here cannot be, they're disconnected, so it doesn't see them. It works locally in the moduli space. If we understood the Lagrangian duality in much more detail, if we understood really how open-spin maps are become a closed-spin map, or vice versa, we could perhaps make a more formal statement or a more rigorous statement. But that's all. This is all I understand at the moment. I didn't hear the question. I mean locally in the moduli space of maps. It does show up. You have to set the tooth couplings is equal. No. No, I didn't see any effect. Well, it depends on how you orient your cycle.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I didn't. Oh, that's because, well, you have to see how the parameters match. For example, the difference in H11 is just 1, not 2. That's... No, I don't know.
Are you saying
K1 plus N equals K2 minus N? Yeah, so I'm not used to thinking in terms of K and N. I mean, I prefer to think in GS and lambda. And I'm saying lambda 1 has to be lambda 2, which is the Keller modulus of...
But from the train sinus point of view, what's wrong with it?
I don't know. I don't know. Duality doesn't work. No, you can do whatever. I mean, you can do that, and you can compute, and you get something. I don't know. What I'm telling is how duality works.
There's some kind of duality here, and something fundamental like Gauss's law has to first one. It works.
The Gauss's law is on the open thing side. Well, in principle, even the framing, why do you choose the framing the way you choose it? Well, you choose it in order for the duality to work, because you could choose the framing whatever you want, and I don't know, get all sorts of models that I have no idea what they mean. I mean, I don't claim to have a complete understanding of the story. But.
Thank you.
Why not M1 and two arbitrary? Flux,
yeah, I understand. So yeah, so here's the right statement is that I want the two couplings to be equal. If you look at the log gen expansion, I just want the two couplings to be equal.
But they are strict speaking to this string M and this string minus.
Yeah, well, you have to orient your cycles.
Well, there's a there is quite an important line. I mean, there is some distinction between D's and D bars, which I enter the sign choice for the program.
Yeah, but maybe not. Now we can orient your cycle such that they are plus both of them. You probably that sign will show up somewhere else, maybe. Maybe it's just because there are many subtleties when you do this open string computation related to orientation. The choice of signs and orientations. Yeah, because they're independent.
Because you can't equate both G string and
G. No, because you have independent curve classes. So then the jump in H11 is 2. There are no homology relations among the exceptional curves. Compact case gives you extra homology relations. All I'm telling you is how duality works. I'm not claiming to have a complete understanding of the open string theory on independent. Well, that was part of the motivation for this work, of course. But, it's not completed. Well, yeah, so the main message I wanted to... So the message, I think, today is just that there is some very close relation between trans-Simons theory and localization of closed string maps. And I think that's, I don't know physical interpretations is really obscure at the moment. So unless there are other questions, I'd like to, I don't know how much time I have, I wanted to discuss this vertex a little bit. So I'll just say a couple of things. Maybe the main idea about this vertex. As I said before, this is work of Aganaji, Clem, Marino, and Vafa. And the ideas that I'm going to discuss today are also some unpublished work with Antonella Grassi. So what's the idea? I mean, the question you could ask is, well, how or why the duality works? And for that, I'd like to go back to this local case and look a little bit at what really happens in the process. So in the process, we started this local DP2 model. And this is just the configuration and invariant rational curves on inside the zero section. So it's like it's a pentagon. These are the exceptional curves E1, E2. And that's how the invariant curves look. So now in the transition, what happened is that these curves were sort of replaced. First of all, the configuration was broken in two pieces. So you collapsed the two exceptional curves. You replaced them by spheres. And the effect of that was to sort of disconnect this configuration. You got just two disks, D1, D2, and the cylinder, and here the boundaries were linked. So I get links. But the configurations are really disconnected. And accordingly, if you look at graphs, the graphs would also get divided in pieces, if you want. I don't know the right word is, but it just gets cut off and divided in pieces. This is not good. So somehow, the graphs, you take a graph, a closed string graph, you cut it here and here. And then the piece of the graph that maps to E1, it's somehow lost in the process, and you end up getting, and it's replaced effectively by John Simon's theory. That's, all heuristic, some heuristic level. And then the only pieces of the graph that survive are the graphs that we summed over, the open string graphs that we had here, and the cylinder here. So the effect of this is that you get far fewer graphs here than you had it before. Okay, so now, I guess the question one would like to understand, is there a more intrinsic correspondence between John Simon's theory and localization here? Something more, because you see here, it seems that you need to have this -1, -1 curves in order to go to the transition and replace this part of the graph by some John Simon's quantity. So you want something more intrinsic somehow, more local. That would probably work in the absence of a transition. So the idea was to take, what's the idea? Take X to be some arbitrary toric threefold. You take an arbitrary toric threefold, and you look at the configuration, look at configuration of P invariant rational curves. So they would form a graph, which is trivalent because X is threefold. Then I take, and then it goes on and on. It depends on the geometry of X. So this is this graph, a trivalent graph. So, and then the main point is to, now you can, this is non-compact geometry, so you can introduce non-compact Lagrangian cycles along each edge of the graph. So you have non-compact Lagrangians that cut each edge in two. So all these Lagrangians look like S1 times R locally. And they just divide the edges in two pieces. So each P1 gets divided into two disks, like this. So if you think now about the localization computation, this would sort of isolate a piece of the graph. So you have a complicated graph mapping to this configuration. So this cutting would isolate a piece of the graph. So the piece of the graph you isolate here is going to look something like this. It's going to have in principle, can have a genus G component that projects to this point, and then it can have some arbitrary numbers of these components that sort of project to the two, project to the three edges you disconnect. Because here you have the target disks. So the idea simply is to try to, first of all, the idea consists of two steps. So there are two steps to this idea. And the first step, so I'm going to call these things open string graphs. Open string graphs. The first step is sort of, you need to design a gluing algorithm that generates all closed graphs by suing open graphs. Well, I'm not sure which is the right order. And then the next step would be to find some Chern Simons expression. So you want to really find an expression for the local contributions of these graphs, which comes from Chern Simons theory somehow. So find a Chern Simons expression for open graphs. So that would allow you to do this localization computation in a completely different way, by packaging first the local information for each node, for each vertex, in a Chern-Simons-like expression, and then glue. So that's the idea. And the way that goes, so let me see. It's hard to. So Aganagic et al. Found an expression for this so they found the Chern-Simons expression that you're looking for, and it's quite it's quite complicated. I'm not sure I should take it. Well, it's just some expression of the following. So you have an expression z depends on three integers. Maybe I should explain here. Some quantities. I'm going to explain the formula after I write it. KJI, factorial, product, vector J, trace BI, J. So what happens is, what you want is you have here three holonomy variables. Now k1, k2, and k3 are the so-called winding vectors. So they really count. So to get an idea, k1, the first entry in k1 is the number of the enumerative interpretation, the number of boundary components, which map. So mapping to D1 with winding number 1. You just count how many, and you record a number. And then you count how many they map to D1 with winding number 2, and so on. And you organize this information in a winding vector. And then you do the same for the second disk and for the third disk. And these are the winding vectors. So all the information, the non-trivial information about these maps, is really contained in these coefficients. These coefficients have some explicit Chern-Simons expression, which I'm not going to write down. It can be found in their paper, but I'm running out of time, so I don't have. It won't be. Framings. Thanks for So they also depend on three integers, which are framings. Which one? These are just because you have Lagrangian cycles. Okay, well, they depend on these. These are just bookkeeping devices. They're formal. Formal variables that they need to. It's a bookkeeping device for the winding numbers. So, and this expression, there is some explicit thing for this, but I don't have time to write it down and. It would be complicated to explain in detail. But a priori, I should say, it has nothing to do with integrals on moduli spaces. That's the non-trivial part, because this expression here is some Chern-Simons group theoretic construction. It has nothing to do, a priori, nothing to do with that. And then they also show that there is some gluing algorithm. So if you look at two vertices, you have a z left. So you have a k1 and a k2 here, k1, k2, k here, a k here, so I have a k1, I don't know, k3 and k4 maybe. And a z right, k, k3, k4. So you can glue these things. And the gluing is something like you sum over. So the condition for gluing is that the winding vectors have to match here. And you sum over this k, this common winding vector here. And then you add some factor to the type. You add some other trivial factor here. That's really, it's just e to the minus the area of this component over some combinatorics. J to the kj, kj factorial. So this is rather something that keeps track of the area and then the... So they show that there is a simple gluing formula, essentially summing over k. And the idea is now if you have a complicated geometry, you just start gluing and, you know, you glue one by one and you end up getting... So the final answer is that the log, so not the Gromov-Witten potential of x would be just the log, you know, of... Okay, of the result of gluing all vertices. So you glue all vertices one by one according to this rule, and then you take the log, and you're supposed to get the Gromov-Witten potential of x.
Take the log, and then you have this function
of the v. The v disappear in this when you do this. When you do this gluing. Yeah, the idea is to get closed graphs out of open graphs in the end, yeah. So the V was just some bookkeeping device that disappears when you glue two things. And then you keep gluing until you end up getting a closed. And the idea is that you take log of this, of the result. So this is really like the partition function. You really want the free energy, and then you... So the challenge now, this is what happened. Now the challenge, I think, is to really understand this thing from the enumerative point of view. So that would be a challenge. And I can just outline the main steps. This is really an open problem. So Antonella Grassi and I made some progress, but so the challenge would be you really want open problems. You really want, first you want to, well, you see, given the techniques I explained in this lecture, you can evaluate what this vertex has to be from our perspective. I mean, we can evaluate integrals and so on and construct some expression. So you can construct an enumerative expression for z. But by now, you know, you have to use the torus action. And that's going to depending. So that's going to be a function of torus weights. Let's call them local torus weights, lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3. So this is a step you can do. It's pretty complicated. You have lots of stuff there, but that's doable. I mean, we did that. So you get a complicated expression involving all sorts of integrals of Manifold classes and so on. So now you want to compare with the vertex, with the Chern-Simons expression. So you want to compare to z. And that's going to be extremely, that's a bit funny now, because these are integers. But when one tries to match, so in principle, they should somehow match, you should somehow give some values to the weights to reproduce the framing dependence. But that's really an obscure step at this moment, because when you start thinking about this, you realize that there are no nice values for these weights that would give you a nice integer expansion for the enumerative expression. So if you remember what happened is that in the, if we had a single disk, we picked up nice values. We found some nice set of boundary conditions, nice values of the weights that produce a very nice integral expansion for a single disk. For three disks, it seems that there is no such nice choice. So the only thought I have at the moment is that we probably have to evaluate this at some fractional values of the n. So you formally make the n's fractional and dependent on lambdas, and then you try to compare. And you give up integrality, but that's OK if you're just interested in the final answer. And then the second step is try to explain the gluing algorithm. in terms of graphs and fixed loci in terms of graphs. So again, you want to explain the gridding algorithm in terms of enumerative geometry. And we took some steps in this direction, but it's not clear yet how this gridding algorithm compares to the Chern-Simons gridding algorithm there. Before I close, I should say that for the one vertex, so the vertex with a single leg, like this situation, there is a recent formal, a rigorous proof for the expression of this vertex due to Melissa Liu, it's Liu, Kefeng Liu, and Zhao. So there is a nice mathematical proof for the vertex with one leg, and the other case is open. And so that's the main idea that I, as far as I understand at the moment. So there are many things to understand. I'll stop here. Oh, the comparison? The comparison is that this, the Chern-Simons expression has a nice integral expansion, and these are integers, and if you expand it in the tooth coupling, exponentiated tooth coupling and GS, you get nice integer expansions. Now, if you take this your enumerative expression and you try to give nice some clever values for lambdas, you immediately realize you can't. You can't get an integral expansion. That worked for this case. It doesn't work for this case. I believe you have to make these guys formally fractional, the way we saw before, and then you compare. You give up integrality, but that doesn't matter because in the end you glue everything together, so it's gonna. So that's my feeling that this thing in the end is some sort of a generating functional for all these integrals of Hodge classes, but you have to be careful how you extract that information out of this. It's a subtle. And then the gluing also.
He didn't really restrict the work on the two vibrations. The fact that these graphs were bigger.
No, I don't think it's.
If you do a general Laveyard, for instance, if your T3 vibration would be more complicated.
Okay, for a general Laveyard. Yeah, for me, that's.
You don't think you know the rule.
It's hard for me to think because I don't. What do you mean by how do you local? I mean, if you don't have a torus action, so, or you think you have a torus action. Ah, if you, yeah, but that okay.
It all depends very much here on this SL2 structure.
It seems to depend on that, yeah.
So there is some probably a similar story with SL3, which is much more complicated.
Yeah, that would be harder to understand, I guess. No, I didn't think about that, to be honest. I was just trying to understand this one.
Can you say something about the heuristic of why? How did they come up with
it? It's basically because you look at back to the local conifold transition. So you have this O minus one. I don't know all the details. I just can explain the main idea. You have this, and then this gives you K star of S3. So the story here, as far as I understand it, is that it's something. It's a game like this. You can place non-compact cycles, for example, on three legs, for example, and the transition will just map them to non-compact cycles here. And so here you have disks and so on. And then here you get holomorphic cylinders that go and you get another holomorphic cylinder here that ends on the sort of linked to this one. What I'm saying is that it's easy, it's relatively easy to guess the dual of this configuration. But then the trouble is You should have, you really want this to move this brain inside here. So that's some sort of what they call some sort of an analytic continuation in John Simon's theory that I don't really understand. So there is, you have to do some magic here to produce, really, to isolate the vertex. You have to sort of, you see, no, I don't think I can say more than that. There is some.
There's no linking.
Yeah. No, no, there is no, it's not a standard thing. It's not like you take a knot with a torus knot or, no, no. It's some magic that you do here to move the brain inside together. That I don't think I can explain for you. Yes, that was the hard part, because it's not a a standard John Simon's expectation value.